to me, success is having the ability to live the kind of life you want to live. In other words, it's not about, you know, achieving a certain income level. It's not about having a certain amount of money in the bank, although those things are and can be totally important. The real question is, if you're honest with yourself and you said, what kind of life do I want to live? Am I able to live that life right now? Not in the future, not in retirement, right now. That is the question you want to solve.
Welcome to the Happy Engineer Podcast, the place where we help engineers to build your career, balance your life, and be happy. My name is Zach White, a former engineer now turned CEO, lifestyle engineering coach, and your host. I believe that success without fulfillment is failure. Join me each week as we bring you an inspiring leader or message to help you enjoy both. Thanks for investing time with me today. Now let's do this. You are going to love today's episode. We're going to address questions like, what do you believe really is the truth about multitasking? What is the secret to working less and earning more? The thing we all want. And how would you use 40 extra hours per month if that time were freed up in your schedule? This is just the tip of the iceberg for today's show with guest and productivity expert coach, Dave Crenshaw. If you struggle with focus, you feel overwhelmed by how much there is on your to-do list and want to reclaim those 40 hours, you're in the right place. Get ready to have your mind expanded by a true leader and a man who has dedicated his life's work to helping people like you and me get our time back. Enjoy. You may have heard me say this before, but just in case you missed it, I have a special offer for you. If you are an engineer and you want to accelerate your career growth while balancing your life outside the office, let's connect so our team at Awaco can help you overcome the barriers and blocks you are facing today. I'd like to invite you as my friend to request a career clarity call, followed by a free one-on-one coaching deep dive with our client success team. We work exclusively with engineers just like you and have helped hundreds of engineering leaders reach their goals. Schedule a quick call now by visiting careerclaritycall.com. Again, that URL is careerclaritycall.com. It's free, and I promise it will be incredibly valuable. We look forward to talking with you soon. Welcome back, friends. Awesome to be with you. I'm here today with Dave Crenshaw, and I love this guy. I've been following him for a long time. Dave develops productive leaders in Fortune 500 companies, universities, and organizations of every size. He's been appearing in Time Magazine, USA Today, Fast Company, the BBC News, loads of other amazing places you can find his content, including his courses on LinkedIn Learning, which have been viewed, get this, tens of millions of times. I count for one of those tens of millions. And his five books have been published in 8 languages, the most popular of which I've got in my hands right here is The Myth of Multitasking, How Doing It All Gets Nothing Done. It's a time management bestseller. I love it. You need to read it. And as an author, speaker, online instructor, Dave has transformed the lives and careers of hundreds of thousands around the world. It's an unbelievable honor to have you here with us today, Dave. Thanks so much for making time.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Zach.
It's a pleasure. So, Dave, the engineer listening to this can deeply relate to productivity in a job-related sense. We're constantly hacking away for that 1% improvement, knocking a few seconds off our production cycle times. But what I thought would be interesting to hear from you because of your expertise is this idea that you talk about that there's 3 different kinds of people when it comes to productivity. Can you just introduce that? Maybe we can figure out as an engineer, which one do I fall into today?
Yeah. So when I first start working with someone, whether they're going through my courses or I'm doing, private consulting, I find that people are on this spectrum of chaos on one side and focus on the other. And everyone listening to this fits somewhere on the spectrum. So on the far side of focus, this means that you've always been organized. You've always been on top of every single thing that comes into your day. You've never been late. And it's almost from birth. That is the focus master. And when I speak to audiences all around the world, and I'll ask people to identify how many of you identify with what I just described. It's usually about 2 to 3% of people fit into the focus master category. And on the other side, the far end of the spectrum is the chaos master. This is someone who's never been organized, never been on top of things. They're always scattered attention. And then in the middle is where most people fit, which is I call them the nomad. And they have the heart and soul of a focus master, but they lost their way somewhere along the line. You know, maybe within the last 10 years or so, something happened in their life and career where all of a sudden chaos started to creep in. And depending on where you are on the spectrum, what I'm teaching has a different way of helping people.
Something happened to mm-hmm. knock them off their way. Dave, what are the kinds of things that people experience that kicks them off of focus, starting down that path towards chaos? What are those moments in people's lives?
Well, the biggest thing is when they start to let technology run their life rather than using technology to be productive. The problem with all the tools that we have, they're not necessarily the issue. What's the issue is that we have not evolved as quickly as they have to keep up with it. So when we start allowing, for instance, our email to constantly pop up and we're hitting send and receive all day long, or every single text message comes in, notifies us, we are cultivating the habit of being disorganized, of being chaotic. Also, and this probably applies to a lot of people who are watching, listening to this, advancements in career. It's easy to stay organized when you're only required to do one thing and one thing only. Mm-hmm. But the moment yes. you start to become a manager, the moment you start to become an entrepreneur, the moment you move up the ladder, you're actually putting more and more responsibility on your shoulders. And this is one of the great ironies or the paradoxes of success, that career success breeds career chaos. The better you do, the more chaotic it becomes. And I think a lot of people think about it and they go, it's the opposite, right? I'm going to have more money. I'm going to have more free time. I'm going to get promoted. But the opposite is actually true. It ends up eating up our day and our attention. And so even the most focused of focus masters starts to become more and more and more like a chaos master every day.
This mindset shift for the senior engineer, the high performing individual contributor who's listening to this, I really want them to hear the power of what you just said, because there is a belief that, man, if I could just get to that manager level and I have a team of people who can do this work, you know, that's going to be so much easier then. Or maybe, you know, you're at a manager and you're stuck in middle management and you think, if I could just get that director promotion mm-hmm. and let the middle management take care of everything, it's going to be so much easier. Career success breeds career chaos. And the thing that popped in my mind when you said that, the compounding of the two, the promotion itself, and then we try to solve it by throwing more technology into our approach. So if this is the first time somebody's thinking this way, how do you avoid getting into that downward spiral of these two things, the desire for promotions and the chaos that automatically triggers, and maybe our default approach to actually throw more chaos into the mix? Like, how do you undo or stop that downward spiral?
Well, the beautiful thing is I'm talking to a group of people right now who understand the value of systems, right? Processes, procedures, putting everything yes. together in an organized format. So the solution is for you to take the time to step aside, get out of that crazy waterfall that is your workday, and establish personal productivity systems. This means starting from the ground up, looking at every aspect of your day, everything from how do I respond to email to where did I put that piece of paper that I got, this receipt that someone gave me. And you analyze every single part of the process and rebuild the way that you're going to be productive and do it in a way that is suited to you. And really, you know, you mentioned my courses on LinkedIn Learning. That's what I'm doing with people. I'm helping them, for instance, in my time management fundamentals course, how to create a customized time management system to them. And then I have another course called Finding Your Time Management Style, where that's where you start to understand how do I like to work in my day? And then you use the customizations from that to really get it to be a perfect fit. And that really is part of the problem that a lot of people have is they read a book or they hear someone else's thing and they try to force themselves into that system. But instead, what you want to do is say, what is the way that I inherently like to work? How can I make that system work for me, not the other way around? But it does take a pause. It takes time to make time. So we need that break.
We'll put links to those courses in the show notes. And for people listening, go check out Dave's courses. I mean, he's provided so much value in there. But let's back up a second. Yes, the engineer listening loves systems, and they're probably geeking out at this right now, like, oh, I found my guy, that he's speaking my language. But Dave, you don't come from the engineering background. How did you stumble into this awareness and really become focused on personal productivity systems? Like, what was that journey like for you?
So I'll try to be as concise with this as I can be, but I started out growing up around entrepreneurs. And I don't know if you've heard of the serial entrepreneur, right? That's the person who successfully starts companies over and over. I grew up around serial killer entrepreneurs. These are people who unsuccessfully started companies over and over and over. And so I grew up with a fear of that, of wanting to not have that happen. So it was one of those things where you have a morbid fascination of something that was terrible growing up. So I studied entrepreneurship, and then I started coaching entrepreneurs at a very young age. In fact, before I completed college, I'm 46 right now. So it was almost exactly half of my lifetime ago, 23 years ago. But what I found in working with these individuals was that the number one problem that they had was time management. They were disorganized. They were out of place. It didn't matter what I told them to do to work on their career or on their business. They couldn't execute it because they just didn't have time. So I put together a program to try and help them, but also to help me. Because one thing that's really different when it comes to me versus other time management gurus, whatever word you want to use, is that I was diagnosed as, and this is word for word what the psychologist said, freaking off the charts ADHD. So, wow. I had to help myself and I had to help these other people, these people that I was coaching. And so I created a program that was based on some of the greatest time management philosophy out there, but stripped it down and only left what was absolutely necessary. And that led to my book, The Myth of Multitasking. That led to my courses on LinkedIn Learning. And that's really the program that so many people use now. So it started out of helping people who were inherently disorganized become organized.
Freaking off the chart.
Yep.
ADHD. So we got to unpack that a little bit. What was the trigger to even get tested or the discovery of that, Dave? How did that time of life look?
You know, I heard two words that changed my life, and the words were, I'm pregnant. And when I think at the time I was still trying to be a rock star. I had a band. I had been jumping around from career to career to career all over the place. And then I heard those words and I was like, I'm going to be a father soon. And then I started to think about my own father, and to his dying day, he passed away about, you know, 4 or 5 years ago. He never, ever, ever broke that pattern of being disorganized, of jumping from a career to career. I mean, his method of organization was to throw everything in a black plastic bag. And if he couldn't remember what was in it a year later, he'd throw it away. So I was like, I can't do that. I need to set a better example. I want to provide for this life that's coming in. So that's when I went out and sought up the help of a psychologist. And I said, look, here are all the things that are happening in my life. I saw it in my father. And he gave me a couple of tests. Yeah, he gave me one test. He's like, I can't believe what you just gave me. I have to give you a second test. He gave me the second test. And that's when he said what he said. And he also added to it, if there were a fifth standard deviation, you'd be in it. I can say with 99.99% accuracy, you've got ADHD. So that was really the turning point in my life, was just finding out that I was going to be a father.
The Six Sigma guys are out there cheering. Dave made it to the fifth standard deviation.
Exactly, the fifth standard deviation.
Which chapter of your book does the black plastic bag system fall into? I'm not sure. I don't remember that page in the book. No, man. So that's a really, that's a tough moment to be in, and just kind of get labeled and diagnosed. And there's people always say, well, wow, what'd that do to you? What was the impact of awareness of that for you? Was it a relief to just understand this part of how you had lived, or was it scary? Like, what was that response to being told, hey, you're off the chart on this ADHD scale? What was that like for you?
It was liberating because it gave me a target. It gave me something to tackle, whereas before it was just sort of this general feeling that what I was doing was not correct. And I mentioned how I started out with business coaching, so that the band thing, the music thing, and also the jumping around from career to career came after that. And so what happened was, when I had that target, I said, you know what? I have a good background in business systems, in productivity, and creating structure to help someone succeed. So I'm going to use that background to create systems for myself. But without that knowledge of what it was I was dealing with, I didn't have a target to tackle. So it was very helpful. And by the way, for people listening to this, I highly recommend working with a therapist. I think that's that's not just a personal thing, that's a career thing. Because yes, many of the mistakes that we make in our day-to-day personal life are reflected in our career.
And thanks for saying that, Dave. I agree 100%. And working with, you know, therapist after my divorce was extremely powerful for healing in my own life and moving forward. And, you know, I believe now the best time to see a therapist is when you don't need one, you know, and go start that process. But the other thing, just to acknowledge your courage in facing that diagnosis from the mindset of growth, a target, and not letting it become a permanent label of what your capability and potential is. And so for the engineer listening to this, maybe you've been labeled in some way in your life in the past, or even just recently, you know, just be inspired by Dave's response to the awareness. It gave relief and a target. And so the journey to the target then, what was, is it linear? Is it the nice straight line all the engineers here hope it is? Or what was it actually like, the road to becoming now a true productivity expert and coach, teacher, trainer for all of us? How did that unfold?
Well, it's certainly not linear. It probably looks more like a stock market chart. And in fact, that's something that I talk about with people when they're struggling with this kind of progress, is that we're looking for the general trend. The general trend is what matters, not the individual ups and downs along the way. And so for me, the general trend was always upward, but it was up and down and all over the place. So, and you know, it's interesting. I have a course that'll be coming out probably by the time this releases, or if not very soon after, called Turning Weaknesses into Strengths. And one of the things that I say, and this applies whether you have ADHD or whatever it is that you're dealing with, weaknesses do not make you weak. It's what you do with them that matters. And similarly, strengths do not make you strong. I see lots of people who, you know, they have lots of natural gifts, but they don't apply that, or they don't enhance it or work on it. So no matter what it is that your challenge is, you want to make a commitment to daily growth, or probably weekly growth is a better way to put it. For instance, you have a weekly schedule where you're going to sit down and you're going to study something else and enhance yourself and your career. It's all too easy to fall into the trap that education ended when I got out of college. But education, I mean, I guess it's a good thing. We already know, Zach, that anyone listening to this already has the right mindset, because they're trying to improve themselves by listening to your excellent podcast. So I would just say, add to that, make a learning regimen every week a part of it, so you can always keep moving forward.
So Dave, if somebody listening to this falls into the chaos master category, they're hearing this conversation. It sounds like we're making the claim, hey, you want to be on the focus side of this spectrum. And they might look around their desk and it's a disaster, but they're that person who has lived their whole life saying, yeah, but I know where everything is. Like, mm-hmm. I'm so good at this and I don't need any of these productivity, personal productivity systems. I don't need this. You know, they're tempted to stop listening right now. What would you say to that person who has survived or even created a certain level of success in their life in a constant state of chaos? Why invest the energy to move in this direction of focus?
Yeah, I would say that you've achieved success in spite of your tendencies, not because of them. And if they're seeing this video, you can see my office. This is not a background. This is my actual home office. But when I started, it was just a war zone. Like, you had to use a shovel to get from the front door to the desk. It was absolutely terrifying. And when you live in it, you don't recognize the stress that it's causing and the mental burden that it places on you. I don't like organization for organization's sake. Now, this looks really, really nice here, but part of the reason is because I hired an interior decorator. I mean, this has been an evolutionary process for me. I'm not so interested in things looking nice for organization's sake.
Yeah.
I like them to be organized because it's faster, because it's easier, because it puts less stress on me. And when you have the ability to go into a space where you feel like, you know what, there's nothing unresolved in here. There's nothing that needs my attention other than what I'm going to think about right now. I'm going to think some great thoughts. I'm going to try and solve a problem. You want to have a work environment that does not place additional psychological baggage in your head. It's hard enough right now in the technology-driven, interruption-driven world that we live in to just keep up with that. So don't place the additional handicap on yourself that clutter creates.
One of the things I share with all my clients at Oeko, Dave, is that you show up wanting promotion or more income or some form of career success. So that's why you hire a coach. But I remind them, we need to coach the whole person. You can't show up and only coach a single career strategy and leave all these other areas of your life untouched. And one of the things that you talk about that I think is really powerful, I'd love to hear your perspective on this, is that getting out of chaos and into focus, becoming more productive, getting organized, it's not just about you and your own, you know, life and success, but it impacts the people around you and your relationships. Help me understand the link.
Well, so there are lots of different things that I studied in relation to this. I have a book called The Power of Having Fun. One of the things that I discovered was there's this model called the Work Home Resources Model. And basically it says, the more security, the more support that you feel at home, and I'm including like your friends, heck, your pets, whatever it is, the more stability you feel there, the more stability you feel at work, and vice versa. The more power is not the right word, but the more strength you feel in one area gives you strength in the other. So that's part of it. The other part of it is the balance that occurs when you build relationships with other people. Work is valuable and work has its place, but you also have a life outside of it and you want to feel that that's rewarding. So a big part of what I'm talking about with people is saying, look, your work exists to serve your life. If it's getting in the way of the things that you really want to do most, if it's dragging your energy down, if it's causing you stress, what is the point of this? Why are we doing all of this work? So we have to find meaning every day in what we're accomplishing. And we have to feel that what we're accomplishing is giving us the quality of life we want to have. Now, sometimes people ask me, Dave, what's your definition of success? To me, success is having the ability to live the kind of life you want to live. In other words, it's not about you know, achieving a certain income level. It's not about having a certain amount of money in the bank, although those things are and can be important. The real question is, if you're honest with yourself and you said, what kind of life do I want to live? Am I able to live that life right now? Not in the future, not in retirement, right now. That is the question you want to solve.
Mm, I love that. The one day when syndrome is a plague amongst engineers who I work with. And just listen to what Dave just said there. Am I able to live and experience and enjoy the life that I desire, the fulfillment, the meaning, the purpose that is mine right now? And if the answer is no, Dave, what would you say is the very next step for someone if they honestly say, no, I'm not able to do that? Where would they go first?
Start small. Pick one thing and schedule 20 minutes in your day to do that thing and make a commitment. Taking a break, having fun, enjoying life is not something that you get to do after you're caught up on work. As long as you think that way, you will never, ever be able to do it.
So
because there's always more work. So instead say, you know what? I'll give you one example. A couple that I worked with, they said, you know what? They were a power couple. They were always talking about work when they were together. And I said, well, what do you guys both like in common? And they said, we both like Survivor. I said, okay, great. Let's make an appointment between you two to watch Survivor at a consistent part. They were watching the reruns, so they could do it every day, right? So they had it at a consistent time. And that one little thing, and I said, during that time, you don't talk about work. You don't think about work. You just enjoy watching this together. Watching Survivor for that period of time saved their marriage. And not only that, but it helped their career because of that work-home resources model. They started to realize, you know what? I do have something other than that. Now, of course, they went on to enjoy other things in their life, not just watching some crazy TV show. But that's where it starts. Just a small commitment to doing something that you enjoy, and you keep that appointment sacred.
There it is. I think that is such a powerful insight. We make the destination such a big thing sometimes. Just take that small 20-minute action starting every day. That's amazing. So listeners, if that's the only thing you do out of this, that'll change your life right there. I can't let us not talk about multitasking, Dave.
Sure.
This book was amazing. I love it. The Myth of Multitasking. If you haven't bought a copy and you're listening to this, go out and get it right now. We'll put a link in the show notes to do that. But multitasking as a topic gets debated all the time. And I still have engineers come into my program who say, I am a multitasker. It's one of my strengths. And there's this belief system that there's this select group of people who are so great at it and they're special and that they ought to operate that way because it's their gift. And I just would love to hear straight from the guy who has as beautifully scripted.
Who wrote the book on it.
I mean, it is as crisp as I've ever seen. I love the way you talk about it. So Dave, what's the truth, man?
Okay. The easiest way to get out of this argument is to sidestep it completely. Multitasking, the word itself, is the problem because it's one word that's trying to describe multiple complex processes that might be taking place in your brain. Stop thinking in terms of multitasking and instead think in terms of these two words, switch tasking or back tasking. Switch tasking is when you're trying to perform multiple attention requiring tasks at the same time. That would be like listening to this podcast while answering email. And if you're switch tasking, you are paying switching cost. Now that has, you know, if you have any background in economics, that's a loaded phrase because switching cost means you have to pay a cost greater than just what you did. Meaning every time you switch attention, there's a cognitive load. There's a drop in time. There's an increase in mistakes. There's an increase in stress levels that you experience. So switch tasking is always counterproductive, or at least it always has a cost associated with it. Now, backtasking is where something mindless, mundane, or automatic occurs in the background. For instance, you're jogging while listening to this podcast. That can be productive because one of the things is automatic. It requires no attention. Therefore, you are getting more productive. So really the question that I would ask, if someone came to you, Zach, and they said, I'm a great multitasker, I would say, do you mean you're a great switch tasker or do you mean you're a great back tasker? Because back tasking is important. That's delegating a project to someone else while they're working on one thread of an engineering project while you're working on something else. That is good. That is productive. But if they're talking about trying to have multiple things happening that are requiring attention, they're kidding themselves. The evidence is absolutely overwhelming. So what you held in your hand is the second edition of The Myth of Multitasking. The first edition came out in 2008. At that time, there were a lot of studies, maybe, I don't know, 10 to 20 studies that exist. We're now in 2021. There are hundreds of studies. There's a preponderance of evidence that says when you try to accomplish multiple attention-requiring tasks at the same time, you are being less productive.
So this is a really powerful distinction. And I love this sidestepping the argument altogether. So for the person who believes, if you're listening to this and you believe that you are somehow special or unique in switch tasking, that you can actively respond to an important email while you're listening to Dave and I talk about why you should not be doing that. The evidence is clear. That is not the way that our brain is intended to operate for ultimate productivity. Yeah. I see you've got something on the tip of your
tongue. And I would add one thing to that too. Interesting. In my own backyard, University of Utah, there's a research place. They've done lots of studies. Here's the funny thing about it. The more someone thinks that they are excellent at multitasking, there is a correlation between them being more likely to be terrible at it. So the more proud you are of thinking you're a multitasker, I can pretty much guarantee you're probably one of the worst there is at it.
That is amazing. I can't wait to share that with the people who come to Awaco and make that claim. You know, I'm going to tell Dave Crenshaw told me that you are probably the worst. This is amazing. So I saw, and this may even be an outdated number, Dave, but you had 28% as an average knowledge worker, the losses from those switching costs in the workplace, from those interruptions, those switches, those, you know, email to conversation to text to meeting to 28%. Maybe that's even outdated now, but this is a big number, especially for an engineer who gets paid unbelievable money to go solve problems that are just a fraction of a penny or a percent in the work that we do. And here we're leaving 28% or more on the table just because of our behavior as chaos masters. You know, is that still true today? And and what are people doing to solve that problem?
Well, so that number comes from a study by BaseX Research that was with the first edition. And I still quote it because I think it's a great number. However, I would say that number has dramatically increased over time. I would probably put it closer to 35, maybe 40% of lost time. And this is not time spent, I don't know, thinking around playing, you know, video games on your computer. I'm talking about time lost in the seams. If we just took that number, 28%, that is one work week every single month. If you have people on your team, that means that one quarter roughly of their time is just wasted. It's just garbage. And the reason why it's happening is because of the way that they are allowing attention switches to creep into their day. I would say, you know, it's closer to 35 to 40%, which is the interesting thing is when people go through my time management training program, typically they're recovering in the neighborhood of 40 extra disposable hours every month. And I like to emphasize that because sometimes when people hear about time management, like, oh, this is boring, this is time management. I say, okay, what would you do with an extra 40 hours every month? And I hear things like spend more time with hobbies, spend more time with family, get some sleep, you know, educate myself, whatever it is. I say, great, this issue is about that. What you just put down, whatever it is you wish you could do if you had an extra 40 hours every month, that's why you want to go through this training. That's why you want to tackle this.
You know, this might be a perfect transition then, Dave, to the question I always like to finish with. And I mean, first of all, there's so many powerful things to explore in this space. And for the engineer listening, I hope that you'll take this to heart. 40 hours a month of disposable, not like somewhat unproductive time. We're talking about genuinely lost time that you can recover and apply to something meaningful in your life, whether that's more work and promotion, if that's what's really important, or if it's family, if it's exercise and health and vitality, whatever it is that you want to put in that time, that's not trivial, 40 hours. But Dave, I love in engineering, I love in coaching, the idea that questions lead and the answers follow. And when we ask a better question in our life, we get better answers and better outcomes. And so for the engineer listening to this, who wants to feel happier, they want that fulfillment, they want the success, you know, they want to be more productive, more focused, what is the best question that you would lead them with?
So we haven't talked too much about this, but I still feel like it's the right question. And I think it will lead someone to the right place. And by the way, I love what you're saying about questions leading to finding answers. I completely agree with that. The question you want to ask yourself is, how can I increase my value per hour? Hmm. Not how much money I can make per year, not how I can get a promotion, but how can I increase the amount of money I'm worth for every hour I spend working? Because that is the pathway to freedom. If you can increase your value per hour, then that means that you don't have to work as many hours to increase your income. And if you can increase your value per hour, that means you're going to have more free time to do the things that you want to do. One of the easiest places to start with increasing your value per hour is to reduce switch tasking.
Increase your value per hour. I absolutely love this. And the thing that strikes me and I share with my clients is also around thinking energy as well as time to increase that value. Sometimes we just look at how many hours in a week or a month or, you know, total are we working? We look at these big numbers. If you would just show up at 100% of your energy for every hour that you're at work, then you're going to get to that max value that you're able to create. But this is a really awesome paradigm shift, your value per hour. And Dave, do you think about that in terms of dollars, or do you think about it in other ways as well?
It's really odd, because the core of what I believe is about quality of life. It's about spending time with family, right? I've got three kids. I've got, you know, a wonderful woman I'm married to. And I come from a place of fulfillment. Yet I absolutely believe it's about dollar per hour. Because yeah. Consider this. Let's say that you meet two people. Think of it. Think of an annual income that you think is fantastic. I'm not going to give a number because sometimes it's going to be off for people. Just get that number in your head. You go to a networking thing. You're meeting people. You meet person A and they say, I make that income and I work 80 hours a week. And then you meet person B and they say, I make that income, but I work 30 hours a week. Who is more successful in this scenario? And the reason why that person is more successful is because dollar per hour, they are making more money. And when they make more money per hour, it gives them the freedom. And now we go back to the definition of success. It gives them the freedom to live the kind of life they want to live.
That's amazing. Dave, I can't thank you enough for your time today. I'd love to keep going, but just be respectful of your time and our listener. I know they're going to want more from you. Please tell us, you know, if they want to get into your courses or learn more, just connect with you. Where's the best place for people to go to learn and get some time with Dave Crenshaw?
Yeah. So first off, my website, davecrenshaw.com. Crenshaw is C-R-E-N-S-H-A-W. And then also, you know, I'm always doing stuff on LinkedIn. You know, you and I have connected on LinkedIn. I'm a big believer in it. So please go there and you can, there's a follow button. You can follow me. You go to linkdave.com. That's just a quick link that'll take you to my LinkedIn profile. Hit follow and we can be connected there too.
Awesome. And I personally highly recommend following Dave on LinkedIn. I see his stuff almost every day. And The Myth of Multitasking, I've read this book and love it. You have, it's 5 books now. Is that right?
Yep. 5 books. I've got a secret 6th one though. You want to know about it?
Yeah. Tell us about the secret 6th.
Engineers might appreciate this. So I wrote a family science fiction action novel, family friendly. So I did that under a pen name. It's called The Maker War. And I wrote that under DMC Shaw. So again, that was one of those things like living the kind of life I wanted to live. I wanted to write a fun, family-friendly, geeky sci-fi book. So you can check out the Maker World.
That is so, well, there's the Easter egg for the engineer who stuck with us all the way to the finish line. Yeah, Dave, thank you so much for the time. I hope we can do this again in the future and wish you immense success as you continue changing the lives of leaders around the world with your message of focus, out getting out from the pressure of chaos in our lives. And God knows we need it now more than ever. So thanks again, Dave.
Thanks, Zach.
Hello again, my friend. It's Zach White, your host and your coach for this wild ride called career growth. I hope you're enjoying the show. By the way, if you feel like an overworked and undervalued engineer who wants to find better balance and get paid what you're worth, I want you to get started today by checking out the Productivity Power Laws, my free video short course at productivitypowerlaws.com. If you're new here or you haven't done this yet, this is definitely the first step to get started in applying these principles to your life. So head over to productivitypowerlaws.com and grab your free gift from me and the team at Awaco. Okay, my engineering friend, you and I have got to spend a few minutes decompressing and taking action on what we just got from our man, Dave Crenshaw. What an incredible conversation. So many places we could go with this, but let's actually start right where Dave left off with his powerful question, how can I increase my value per hour? And I totally agree with Dave that we want to look at this in terms of dollars per hour. And, you know, sometimes there's a resistance inside of us to looking at money and desiring to increase our, you know, income. It feels selfish. Maybe it feels a little yucky to you. Or maybe you're on the opposite side of that and you absolutely love the idea of maximizing your income. Regardless of where you're at, the key question here around dollars per hour, value in terms of money per hour, is important on either side. And remember back to the example he gave. If you're earning, you know, $200,000 a year working 80 hours a week, and the person on your left is earning $200,000 a year working 30 or 35 hours a week, who would we say is the most successful? And it's an obvious answer. If you can drive that revenue, if you can drive that income in a fraction of the time, you're being more productive and you're creating the freedom to either pursue additional income, if that is your vision and goal, or to spend that extra time and energy in other areas of your life, in the other buckets that really matter. So we do want to talk about this in terms of dollars per hour when we're focused on our career. And here's what you need to be thinking. Do you know with total certainty which activities that you do as part of your role are the most valuable? And this comes back to an application of the 80-20 Pareto principle in a big way. I guarantee it that there are certain activities you are doing in your job that are extremely high value. The 20% of your activities that are worth 80% of your salary. And it could be even more extreme in the split than that. And actually, I have a free video training course on productivity where we talk about a really key principle called 80-20 stacking. And if you haven't downloaded my free video training course on that, I encourage you to do it so you can go deeper on this. But it begins with understanding which activities are worth more and which activities that I do are worth less. And the journey that you're going on here is the process of eliminating, automating, delegating all of those tasks that are at the lower end of the dollars per hour spectrum. And when you can eliminate, automate, or delegate those tasks, you free up capacity to put more of your time and energy into those high dollar per hour tasks. And when you do that, remember, what you focus on is what you get more of. Where your focus goes, your energy flows, and that's what you create. So when you focus more time and energy in the space of high dollar per hour activities, you are going to create more of that value. And you're going to unlock the next level of even higher value activities. But it begins by moving up that curve. And in order to do that, we have to let go of the things that are at the bottom end of that, these anchors, the resistance. And yes, that does mean that we want to give the lower value tasks to someone else. And that's not an insult to them, by the way. We all had to start somewhere at the bottom of that curve. And when you give a piece of your current job description, the low value tasks, to someone else, it's not an insult to them. It gives them the same opportunity that you have had to learn, to grow, and to move up the curve at their own pace and in a way that's aligned with their own values and vision for life. So make sure that you take this question and chew on it. What is the way that you're going to increase your value per hour? Look at your activities, understand what is really driving the value, and then relentlessly focus on eliminating, automating, or delegating those tasks that are at the bottom end of the spectrum so that you can focus more time and energy exclusively on those high value activities. All right, Dave. He is a voice of reason and not an opinion, a data-driven perspective about multitasking. So if you came into this episode and you had a belief system about multitasking that says, you know, I'm great at this and multitasking is a thing that really works, let's just, you know, put a nail in this coffin once and for all. First thing, multitasking is the wrong word for us to even be talking about. I love this. I love this so much. I'm going to bring this into my coaching with our clients immediately. It's not multitasking by itself. Let's split this into two different categories: switch tasking and back tasking. I love the way that Dave explained this. And switch tasking always comes at a cost. It always comes at a cost. If you are on a Zoom meeting or in an in-person meeting in the room and you're on your phone, you're on your email, you're working on some other topic or problem at the same time, you are paying a price. There is a cost to that. There is no way around it. The data is clear. So be aware of what you are giving up when you do that. All right, you have to make the decisions that are best for you, but don't be naive about the idea that you can do this without paying the switching cost. And the distinction between switch tasking and back tasking to me is so important because it is okay, it is good to get leverage on the power of your subconscious mind, to get time leverage, you know, what we used to hear from Zig Ziglar is net time, you know, no extra time. Those things that are automatic, jogging while listening to this podcast. You know, maybe it's for you, the proverbial walking and chewing gum, you know, things that you can do automatically. That is the place where multitasking, backtasking can have value. But don't kid yourself about what is truly a subconscious and automatic task versus something that is demanding of your conscious energy. I'm not going to sit here and tell you never switch task. All right. There may be a time where switch tasking has a place for whatever reason, but let's be intentional and know that we're paying that price and stop using it as our MO all the time. All right, the book here that I'm holding in my hand, The Myth of Multitasking, How Doing It All Gets Nothing Done, is a great place for you to start if you need support and ways to put this into practice. If you don't have a coach, get one. Work through these productivity tips and systems and get your own career and life out of that place of chaos and moving toward mastering focus. I love it. It's so good. Dave said another thing I want to bring back, and I'd love this phrase: career success breeds career chaos. Career success breeds career chaos. This is why coaching and personal development is even more important as you move up in the organization, as you seek promotion. It's not just about learning new skills or new capabilities, you know, new ways to lead at the next level. It's also for yourself to have the humility to recognize that every time I move up in the scope of my role and the size of my team and the challenges that I'm given, those areas of success are going to breed additional sources of chaos in your life. And beware, as engineers, we love to apply technology to solve the problem. Beware of technology for technology's sake. You can get really good and really fast at doing chaotic things that do not help you to experience the quality of life that you desire and do not help you to continue to grow and reach the next level beyond where you're at. So just know and be aware that career success, it's not something where you move up and all the problems go away. In fact, it's the opposite. And you need to be prepared to invest in yourself so that you can manage and pull together the personal productivity systems that are going to help you be successful. Now, let me say this really clearly. A lot of engineers that I work with will say to me, Zach, I don't know if I want another promotion because I don't want to work so much. I look at the directors or the VPs above me and they're working such long hours, and the culture here is one where, you know, if you make it to that level, then the company just rules your life and there's no way that I want to give up that much of my time, that much of my energy for the company. I want you to hear me now that you do not have to live the same way that the people around you are living at those levels. There is a solution. There is a path where you can honor your values, set healthy boundaries, stay healthy physically, mentally, and spiritually, and enjoy your life along the way at any level in any organization. But you have to recognize that it's going to require an intense investment in your own personal growth and development and a conviction and the courage to show up in a way that is different from the culture and from those peers. But I've seen it, and I've talked and led and coached leaders at some of the highest levels who all express this fact that balance is possible, but you must first believe that it is and be willing to do the work on yourself to get there. 40 hours a month. 40 hours a month that Dave says we can reclaim when we stop believing the myth of multitasking and implement effectively personal productivity systems in our life. I've seen this unfold in the lives of my clients. If you need support on this, let's connect. If you need support on this, connect with Dave. He's got great content. He's got amazing material, and he shared so much with us today, and he's got so much more in his paid programs and his free material that's out there. So go get connected with Dave Crenshaw. Check the show notes for links and give him a huge thank you for the value that he brought today. Go recover that 40 hours. Don't settle for a lack of productivity because you're unwilling to do the work, to learn, and to grow. That's what we're here to do. The happy engineer is one who's making meaningful progress and growing every single day. Stay on the path and let's do this. My friend, that's all we've got for this episode of the Happy Engineer Podcast. Thank you again for investing your time with me today. If you're like me, then maybe you'll take some notes and share this episode with your fellow engineers. Why? Because it will help you learn deeper, remember these insights, and take action. So share this episode with two or three friends just like you who are committed to building their career. Lastly, make sure to link up with us at oasisofcourage.com. Grab our free tools for career growth there in the resource hub. and schedule a free call with our coaching team today. Please just share this podcast with anyone who you think might enjoy it. Until next time, remember to crush comfort, create courage, and let's do this.